couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the one new movie of 2019, and that is Escape Room, plus some of the worst movies of 2018. I'll also be talking about the news, Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring reviews of Bird Box and Bandersnatch, and I look back at Night School, new to DVD and Blu-ray this week. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I want to talk a little bit more about some things that are happening in the background. One of them being Louis C.K. has resurfaced in the news because he did apparently a pop-up stand-up routines that he does. Once he got disgraced last year in the whole Me Too movement with his predilection for, let's just say, engaging in behavior in front of other people that one should really just engage alone, he had lost his movie that he had made that was coming out last year. He's no longer doing a show. He's no longer doing stand-up specials. And a lot of people canceled his appearances. Well, he's a comedian, so he's going to find ways to make money as a comedian. So he has shown up in other places, unannounced stand-up routines. And what's gotten a lot of people sort of their panties in a bunch is that he has been well-received at these locations. He'll show up at some nightclub or somewhere and do a stand-up bit and know that it hadn't been advertised. And comedians will do that, especially usually when they're like working out new material, they'll surprise. So they don't want the press in there. They don't want like big fans coming to see their work in progress. Well, now that we have camera phones and people can videotape stuff and audio tape stuff, it's a lot easier to get recordings smuggled out of those venues. And that's essentially what happened here. He's come under fire again, not for what he was doing before, but because of some of the content of his stand-up. One of them, for example, he was making fun of the Parkland survivors. And that's a political thing, of course, sure. But when you listen to some of his stand-up, it's less about the politics and just, it's very mean-spirited and not in a good nature. And it's only found funny by people who just don't like David Hogg. If David Hogg bothers them and they think he's kind of a nerd or a geek, forget politics, but they just don't like him personally. That's where it's real biting. And a Parkland victim's father had spoken out against this. And this has kind of stirred up some bad will for Louis C.K. And it should, because you are sort of slaughtering some sacred cows here in the media. We had the same thing happen after 9/11 when they had comedians start figuring out when it was time to make jokes about 9/11. And comedians are always out there to push the boundaries. Comedians are always out there to find that line and cross it. And certainly Louis C.K. has a couple times. Now, there are people who are saying, oh, is he turning into this big political? I don't necessarily think he's going into politics. He's doing what works and he's doing what's edgy. And he's doing what really does offend people because that's what comedians do. He just now has to again realize that there's cameras and microphones everywhere. And just because you do an unannounced set doesn't mean somebody can't turn on their microphone memo feature of their iPhone and keep it in their pocket and record the whole thing. It's easy to get recorded anywhere nowadays. You don't need spy equipment. You just need a smartphone because those microphones pick up everything. And for this, you don't even need video. This isn't even the level of Michael Richards screaming out the N-word during a big stand-up routine that pretty much ruined his career. Look, I don't have much sympathy for Louis C.K. because he should know that this is coming. He should know that people are going to start recording this stuff because they've done it already. And you got to tread lightly. I don't care that comedians always have to push the envelopes. You got to be careful with what you do. Another piece of news that is worth talking about is Bird Box. Now, I'm going to be reviewing Bird Box a little bit later because it's caused so much buzz over the last 2 weeks. It's worth looking at now. And I think I need to sound off about it on the show. But the interesting thing about it is there's that little Bird Box challenge that everybody's heard about that even Netflix has come out and said don't do, which is basically saying putting on a blindfold and doing things. And some things that are mundane, like trying to walk around the house and get a glass of milk or something like that, all the way to driving or riding a skateboard. look, you know, people love to put a spotlight on stupid behavior like the Tide Pod Challenge or the Momo Challenge. Honestly, this is the Streisand effect. The more focus you give on this, the more stupid things people are going to do. But here's the reality. People were doing stupid things long before social media. So stuff like the Bird Box Challenge, that kind of nonsense happened in the 80s and the 70s and the 60s and the 50s. It's just you didn't post it on social media, so just the public's awareness of it wasn't around. But, you know, people were doing dumb things. That's always happened. It's just not been magnified under social media. And by magnified, I mean talking about just awareness, not more people doing it. The other thing that's interesting about Bird Box to note is it had 45 million streams. That's what Netflix reported for its first week. And they say if people watch 70% of the movie, they counted that as a stream. And that makes sense because people are going to turn it off at the credits. And if you got through 70% of Bird Box, you've essentially watched the movie. I mean, I think that that's fair enough to say. But what you got to realize is that's not 45 million people. That's 45 million times the movie went out. It could be two, three, four times as much. I watched it with my wife. So we did one stream, but that was two people. I know people who watch Bird Box with three or four people. Whether or not you had a blindfold on during it, surely those are great numbers. And those are significant numbers to look at, and there's a reason Netflix chose to release those. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two really quick ones I want to hit. First one is Close, which opens on January 18th.
The terms of your father's will are explicit, that you take an active role in the company.
The shares, how much are they worth?
We need to assign you a new close protection officer.
Am I supposed to know who you are?
Sam, nice to meet you.
You should know there's been a recent increase in kidnap and ransom. You're great company.
I decided to proceed. Report only to me, understood?
Zoe, stay low, okay?
This is a Netflix movie, and it stars Noomi Rapace as a woman who's protecting a bodyguard, basically trying to protect an heir from being kidnapped. And it looks like kind of a run-of-the-mill thriller. It looks like something that would not have necessarily opened in the major theaters, but probably on VOD or something like that. So I'm putting this in there just to look at, because so much attention has been put on Bandersnatch and Bird Box recently on these major movies, and including stuff like Roma and Ballad of the Buster Scruggs, these movies that are on Netflix that are major players. This is a nice little reminder that Netflix is also still a middling studio and will put out basic VOD type titles as well. Now, the next one I want to hit really quickly is The Prodigy, which opens on February 8th.
Miles isn't wired like other kids.
His intelligence is off the charts.
Mommy, what's wrong with me?
Miles is having a very difficult time making friends. He may need a specialist.
Miles is dangerous.
I don't feel safe with him in the house.
Oh my God.
This is a horror movie. It's another in a long string of evil child horror movies. It looks okay. Taylor Schilling from Orange is the New Black is in it, and I'm curious to see how she does in a movie like this, because she's popped around. She was in some romance movies. She was in one of those Atlas Shrugged movies. Now she's in Orange is the New Black. I think she's trying out genre pictures now. And I'm curious to see this one because I kind of always had a thing for these evil child movies. Not all of them are great. But this one, I think it's interesting because when you listen to the trailer, they point out, he's so smart, he's so brilliant. And that's the thing. As somebody, I actually was trained as a teacher. And you got to watch out for the smart kids, because a smart kid who's got good morals and ethics and has his head screwed on straight is a good kid. But a smart kid with a mean streak is someone to really look out for. I would rather any day deal with a dumb bad person than a smart bad person. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the worst films of 2018.
And the Magnificent!
Magnificent.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to jump over the movie reviews for a second and go back to 2018. I know that was only a couple days ago, but, you know, this week has been the wrap-up of the year, and as we're getting set to look ahead to 2019, and we're already in 2019, I didn't have enough time last week to talk about my worst films. I wanted to hit the best ones, because I think it's important to talk about some of the best films that you may have missed over the years. And a lot of times, if you're a critic, you have a chance to see a lot of movies that your average person doesn't. So it's nice to sort of put these on your radar. Now, equally fun is talking about the worst movies of the year. Now, I know that that's getting kind of a bad name nowadays. Right now, people are like, oh, I don't want to pile on people who are expressing their art. No, when you have millions of dollars behind you and studio funding and studio support, and you have all these pieces in place, you should be at least making something watchable. I try to stray away from doing a raw independent film as worst of the year, because a lot of times those independent films are underfunded. People are shooting and working on the weekends. People barely have enough food to feed their families, let alone feed a cast and crew of 100 people. So those I tend to give a pass. But a lot of times I will go after the studio pieces as the worst of the year. And I'm not going to change that now, because if anyone should make a coherent, decent movie, it should be those people. And they don't. And sometimes they just make absolute rubbish. So my top three worst movies of 2018, or number three, is a sequel to a film from 2008.
This place seems empty.
I think everybody leaves after Labor Day.
This is nice, right?
There's someone else staying here?
Is Tamara home?
I think you have the wrong trailer.
I thought we were all alone.
Leave us alone!
But we've just started.
Strangers Prey at Night. Now, I am a huge fan of horror movies. I have certain ones I like and I don't like. I'm not a big fan of the home invasion movies, but that was just 2008. That was the home invasion. I understood that the home invasion for the strangers wasn't my cup of tea, but I still recognize that that was actually a relatively well-done movie. This sequel is a huge step down. First of all, the cast is kind of low rent. I mean, you got Christina Hendricks, and there's really only two big reasons anybody cares about her. And it was Martin Henderson, I think, is the main guy in this one. And he's somebody who they really tried to make big, and they tried to give him a career about 10, 15 years ago. It never clicked. And he's sort of slumming it now. And, you know, this is one of the slumming films. So, yeah, this was a terrible movie. It was nihilistic and not fun. And it didn't make it made sense, but it didn't have any sort of real purpose to it. And that's the kind of horror movie I don't like. The next one is a sequel as well. Very different, but still horrible. And that is this one.
Don't ask me.
Mrs. Gray, look out your window.
What you know is true.
I'm taking you away for the weekend.
I just can't believe this is my life, that I get to live with you.
I told you.
I'll pick you up at 5.
I might not be done by then.
We're going to follow
you. Don't know why.
How the hell are you, Anna?
Jack, what do you want?
50 Shades Freed. This is the end of the 50 Shades of Grey franchise. It is the least performing of all the movies. And the biggest problem with this one is it doesn't even have the titillation or gee whiz or ooh, aren't I naughty factor from the first one where you had the S&M setting. This is just a movie that shames people for being a little bit kinky and assumes that they have to be cured. So it's the most puritanical piece of garbage masquerading as a sex film. And even then, the story is terrible. The story just falls into a crappy soap opera storyline. And so it's anything that made the original movie at least watchable, this one is not. And it's terrible. And I'm glad this series is over. Finally. Didn't take very long. And then the worst movie of 2018 actually is a tie between this one.
According to the government, we do not exist, but we're very real. We're unpredictable, highly trained, and we save millions of lives. If we fail, there is no backup plan. We are Overwatch, and we get things done.
My government is planning an attack on the United States.
An
Can I trust you?
Put me on a plane and I give you everything.
Deliver that package to here, mile 22.
That would be mile 22 with Mark Wahlberg and John Malkovich. It was directed by Peter Berg. Should have been a big movie. Oh, it was so bad. And it was about these CIA agents that were transporting a prisoner 22 miles. But the characters were all awful and horrible and very similar to the other movie that it tied with, which is this movie.
We got a problem. It's a major crime.
Get to know your enemy, boys. Every big-time crew has been busted. These are the guys who took them down.
Sooner or later, they'll need their fix.
Change of plans. We're trading up. The Federal Reserve. It's like Fort Knox.
At any one time, there's anywhere between $500 and $800 billion in there. Every millimeter of it covered by cameras, sensors, and motion detectors.
Stand across the street and stare at the building for 2 minutes.
You have security.
Only bank that's never been robbed.
That's why we're going to rob it.
Den of Thieves, that came out almost a year ago today. It was like back in January of 2018. Star Gerard Butler actually did well and they're making a sequel, but man, this was awful. Both of these films, this one being about a heist of the Federal Reserve and Mile 22, which is about a different type of authorities, not police, but CIA agents and special ops guys. Both of them had such unlikable main characters. The heroes I didn't care about and I didn't want to see live. They were like the Strangers Pray at Night, a nihilistic view of what authority could be. There's no heroes in these movies. And I'm okay with dark characters and characters that have depth and flaws, but that was nothing but these. This reminded me of that movie that David Ayers did with Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was another one with just dirty cops and nobody was good. Or that movie Triple Nine that came out a couple of years ago. All of these movies are terrible. And they generally don't do well, except for Den of Thieves. But I think that's just because it was such a low-cost movie to make. Because Gerard Butler certainly doesn't command the salaries he did after he did 300, like 12 years ago. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. A couple of dishonorable mentions I want to point out as some of the other worst movies of 2018. I Feel Pretty was terrible. That one stars Amy Schumer. It's another flop from Amy Schumer. Now, a lot of people said, oh, well, Michelle Williams did a great job. I think people just like to say Michelle Williams is great. I've seen movies where she's very good. I've also seen movies where she's awful and phones in her performance. This is one of them that she phones in her performance in an absurd way. Another one that was terrible this year was Truth or Dare. That gets a dishonorable mention. It's the worst example of PG-13ification of horror, where it could have been creepy and on par with the slasher movies of the 80s, but it's not, and then the ending's just awful. Another horror movie I disliked, and I break with a lot of people on this one, is Hereditary. Toni Collette throws down in acting, but it's the most boring, self-absorbed, self-important, navel-gazing horror movie I've ever seen. Clint Eastwood's The 1517 of Paris is also pretty bad, mainly because he cast the people who were in this situation when he should have cast real actors. And then Destroyer, I talked about that just last week, and that, of course, is Nicole Kidman's pointless nonsense attempt to be gritty and dark. And again, hey, it falls right in line with Mile 22 and Den of Thieves. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Escape Room and Bird Box.
Don't stop me, don't stop me, don't stop me.
Hey, hey, hey!
Don't stop me, don't stop me. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
I like
it! Don't stop me, don't stop me.
Have a good time, good time.
Don't stop me,
don't
stop me.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. It is now time to jump into the movie reviews. And I'm going to start things off with the first brand new movie of 2019, the only new movie that is out this week, and that is Escape Room. A group of people receive invitations to an escape room, only to discover they are really playing for their lives.
This serves as an entry voucher
for Minos escape rooms.
Be the first to escape our most immersive room yet.
I think this is the escape room.
We should look for clues.
What are we looking for here?
Anything that looks like a puzzle or a code.
Is it getting hotter?
How do we get out of here?
Got it.
Talk about immersive.
What's wrong with you? That was real.
The first movie of January is always, almost always, a horror movie. And it's almost always never screened for critics. I have seen some really, truly terrible, awful features on that first week of the year. Crappy found footage horror movies. And I love horror movies. I've mentioned that before. I love horror movies, but I don't like bad horror movies. That's like saying, I love pizza, but I hate crappy pizza. It's okay to love pizza and hate crappy bowling alley pizza. So Escape Room, I was not having a very high hopes for it. What's interesting is they actually had a screening for it locally, a promo screening sometime in December, like mid-December. And then we got that obligatory email from the publicist saying, oh, hey, yeah, you're not allowed to come to that. We're not allowing any press in these screenings. It wasn't a big surprise because it's opening January 4th. It was opening at the beginning of the year. But then I went and saw the movie, and the movie's not great. I'm not going to lie to you. The characters are rough. They're either cliched or they're unlikable. It's pretty predictable, certain things that are going to happen. It's not a tightly written movie. It doesn't really keep you guessing, aside from you're like, I know something horrible is going to happen to this person. It's just I don't know exactly what the horrible thing is that's going to happen. So, you know, it's not exactly groundbreaking or anything, but you know what? Honestly, it's also entirely watchable. It moves. It certainly feels like it has a purpose. And while you kind of root for the death of some of the characters because they're annoying, you expect that to happen. And that's kind of the nature of horror movies. That's like the nature of slasher movies. That's kind of what this is. So it's not grisly and violent because it's PG-13. And I know that upsets some people, but I'm somebody who, to me, violence is neither here nor there. I don't feel like I'm robbed after seeing a movie that doesn't have much violence in it, unless it really should. I mean, if it feels that they're really pulling their punches, that's one thing. But this one doesn't feel like it's pulling their punches. You know, it's not like a Saw movie. A lot of people compare this movie to Saw, but it's not, because it's not these torture devices that are cutting limbs off and all that kind of stuff. It's not blood splattering in a dirty basement. And I predicted everything, but, you know, gosh, I've seen way worse. I have seen way worse movies on that first weekend of the year. I mean, I didn't hate it. I was watching the movie expecting to just be rolling my eyes and wanting to check my phone. But, you know, after a while, I kind of watch it. It runs maybe a little long. It does kind of have a double ending to it. But overall, it's entirely watchable and entirely entertaining to a degree. As long as it's one of those larks of a movie, you check your brain at the door type thing. So I'm going to have to say that Escape Room, believe it or not, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about Bird Box. Sandra Bullock stars in this post-apocalyptic thriller about a woman bringing two young children down a river to safety while being hunted by demons that will make people kill themselves if they are seen.
What's going on?
People describe seeing an entity that takes on the form of your worst fears.
Oh my God.
What are you looking at? What did you see? What is wrong with you? Please stop it!
Can't stay here.
Every contact we have had with the outside has brought us death.
Your kids, they deserve hope.
Every single decision I have made has been for them.
There's two ways to look at this movie. One of them, and I'll just talk about it very basically as just a movie, just as a standalone movie, whether it came out on Netflix or in the theaters. This is a very standard post-apocalyptic movie. A lot of people say, oh, is it different? Is it new? No, it's not. And in fact, it's very similar to A Quiet Place, which came out almost a year ago, the John Krasinski movie about the, and it's like sort of like just uses a different sense. In that movie, these animals or these creatures that showed up can hear, and so you got to be quiet. And in this one, the creatures have a visual element to them, so you got to keep yourself blindfolded. So, we've seen that before. We've also seen the people inexplicably killing themselves. That was very much like The Happening. If you've ever seen The Happening, which I actually kind of like, I've always been kind of soft on The Happening. There have been people who just hate The Happening and hate M. Night Shyamalan so much that they malign that movie. And that movie's got some really goofy parts to it. But I thought the whole concept of something that makes people kill themselves is pretty horrifying. I've also once read a Dean Koontz book that had a similar element to it of people doing self-harm. So this sort of thing is not unheard of. And that's why it sort of irks me when people are like, oh, it's totally different. Well, it's not. Also, the beginning of it reminds me a bit of Cell. If you've ever either read Cell, the Stephen King book, or that really terrible adaptation with John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson. That one is also where people, they get the signal sent through their phone and it scrambles their mind and it causes them to kind of turn into monsters. Not physically, but they start killing each other. And so it has that sort of that, the beginning of the apocalypse feel to it. These movies do annoy me because at a certain point you say, well, you know, if I were in that situation and I was stuck in a house with a bunch of strangers, I'd be like, okay, who's a doctor? You know, who's got nutrition experience? Who is, who's been in the military? You know, who has any sort of medical background? All that kind of stuff that you'd want to get out in the open. And they make mistakes in horror movies that people probably wouldn't make in real life, but you would not have a horror movie if people weren't making stupid mistakes. Cause a lot of times that needs to happen to further the plot. And there's one particular moment in there where they make a huge blunder. And I'm like, oh, but you know, you have to, you know that that has to happen in order for the movie to take place. Cause if they didn't make that blunder, the movie would just continue to go on with them in this house being safe. And you don't want them to be safe. You want them to be attacked. That's the whole point. You need to push the narrative along. And in that sense, it's a fine thriller. It works. It's not great. You know, I'm going to say for, you know, it'd be like a 3.5 out of 5 star movie. Now, the other way to look at this movie is how Netflix did it. One of the things they've been doing, especially this past year, is upping their game in terms of their original content. They're not just making Adam Sandler movies. They're making movies that would normally be released in theaters. And some of them, in fact, were in order for getting award consideration, stuff like Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Roma. And this is the first time, this year has really been the first time that they've pushed those. Yeah, you had Beasts of No Nations a couple of years ago. That was a big push from Netflix. And you had Mudbound last year. That was a big awards push. But here you're dealing with some popular stuff. You've got a Sandra Bullock movie, and usually those things are going to be in the theater. This one's got an Academy Award-winning director behind it. It's got John Malkovich in the film. So there's a lot of good things going for this that you would think would raise it above being just a digital TV outlet. Or you go back earlier this year and you look at The Cloverfield Paradox. And while that got sort of middling reviews, that was a major motion picture. And I think that that's one of the things Netflix is trying to do. Now they've changed their business plan. It's different than what the theaters do or the studios do. Netflix is saying, okay, we're going to release this movie, but we don't need to market it. We don't need to find people to buy tickets for this movie. We already have people who are subscribers. We just need to convince those subscribers to watch it. So people have this appearance of saying, oh, I can just watch it for free. Well, you're watching it for whatever your subscription is. And it's just included in there. Sort of like what HBO did in the 90s and 2000s, where they really stepped up their original movies and they became events. And if you already subscribed to HBO, you didn't have to pay any more and you got to see it. And they were big movies and they started to get a lot of awards and accolades. And you're going to see this with this. Now, one of the things they're able to do is they're able to bypass the entire marketing machine. Just like in Cloverfield Paradox, they dropped a trailer during the Super Bowl. They said one trailer and they said, you can watch this after the Super Bowl, and boom, it was there. And then everybody knew about it. With Bird Box, they just released it on the service, and everyone's like, oh, brand new movie, Sandra Bullock's in it, it's a thriller, I'll watch that over Christmas. And that's how you get 45 million at least watching this movie. And it's a brilliant move. And it saves a huge amount of money in the release process. So, outside of all that, I'm still going to have to say that Bird Box kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Bandersnatch, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Night School.
Stop it now.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and finish with the movie reviews. And that review is going to be of Bandersnatch. This Black Mirror film from Netflix follows a choose-your-own-adventure setup telling the story of a video game developer in 1984 who finds his own reality twisted by multiple choices.
Bandersnatch.
It's an adventure game
based on the book.
Jerome F. Davies was a genius.
See that bloke who went cuckoo and cut his wife's head off?
When it's a concept piece, a bit of madness is what you need.
You're not hearing voices, or...
No voices, but there is something.
Bandersnatch was the final straw. Relax.
You're not in control.
Yes, again, this is another Netflix movie, and I think it's important because of what Netflix is doing now, and they kind of capitalized on the end of the year lull while everyone's out in the theater seeing Mary Poppins and Aquaman and Bumblebee and Spider-Man and Vice and some actually possibly seeing Holmes and Watson. They said, hey, let's give people something to watch at home because, of course, the weather's going to be crappy or people are on vacation and they want to come home and they don't want to go to a movie on vacation. But maybe if they're in a hotel room, they can come on and watch Netflix on their phones or whatever. So I think this was a kind of a calculated move to release these two things, Bird Box being one of them, and then Black Mirror right before the new year. Now, if you don't know what Black Mirror is, it's a Netflix series. Well, it's a British series, but it's imported by Netflix. And it's essentially a very dark and creepy British version of The Twilight Zone, being an anthology series where a different episode is a different story. It's basically standalone movies. So some of the episodes are longer than an hour. It's actually quite good. I mean, it's dark and it's got a very devious side to it. But they're very entertaining and they're great pieces of speculative fiction. The catch with Bandersnatch is that it's a choose your own adventure style of a movie. Now, I remember reading these books when I was a kid. It was actually called Choose Your Own Adventure. And they were adventure books that they were either science fiction or, you know, jungle adventure or sometimes a horror story. There are genre pieces and you'd get to the end of the thing and they say, oh, you want to do this or the other thing. It'd give you a choice at the end of a section. And if you choose one, you go to one page. And if you choose another, you go to another page. And they were short paperback books. They probably, any of the stories were maybe about 50 or 60 pages long, but they had multiple endings to them and they'd sometimes branch out and come back. They were fun. I'd read a whole bunch of them when I was a kid. And that was something that was also very popular to do in video gaming, especially early level video games had choices where you can go in one direction or another and you had these branching realities in these stories. So the people at Black Mirror said, let's do a standalone film, call it Bandersnatch, and it's based on it's sort of loosely based on a real video game that was being developed in the 80s that never surfaced. And then through the story, you get to choose. You choose everything from the very mundane elements like what music the kid listens to or what he has for breakfast to whether or not you kill somebody and what you do with the body when you're done. And it gets very, very dark and very, very twisted at times. Now, the movie itself has like five, maybe six. I think it's five different endings. I've gotten to all of them. Because that you're allowed to go back, you're able to go back, and you can fast forward up to the next decision point. But even smaller decisions will lead you down smaller, different, very slightly different paths. It takes about, I'd say, between 2 and 2.5 hours to watch all of the endings and all of the versions of it. If you fast forward through different pieces after you've seen them first, it's the catch though is you need to have the right device or software. If you've got an older TV or an older Roku, it may not allow you to do it. You have to go look at the list of devices and it'll tell you whether you can do it. I know you can do it on like laptops through Chrome. You can do it on an iPhone with updated software and the right Netflix app. And I watched it with my family on Xbox. We have an Xbox, so you're able to do the choices there. And it's actually pretty smooth. The transitions, it really seem to work well, you know, more than, you know, even smoother than something like a Laserdisc video game like Dragon's Lair, which was in the arcades back in the 80s. And I had a lot of fun with this. I thought it's actually one of my favorite movies of the year simply because it's new and it's different and it's good. It's well written. Yeah, it's a gimmick, but it's a well written gimmick. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's also very self-aware at times. It has some very dark humor to it. It has some very twisted elements to it. The happy ending, if you can find the happy ending, isn't necessarily a traditional happy ending. And the, I guess what I call the best ending is also extremely dark. But it's a neat movie and it's a neat way of presenting it. Now, is this a wave of the future? I don't know. Probably not. Because the point is, this movie is well written and well put together. A crappy version of Bandersnatch is going to be a crappy movie. You can put as many endings as you want to on something, but that's not going to make it good. What's neat about it is the choose your own adventure mentality to it. And we haven't had an option for like a feature film like this. The closest I can think of was Clue in the 80s, where And they advertised this was a big deal. If you went to different theaters, the different theaters had different endings. There were like three or four different versions of the last reel of the film, and different theaters got them. And they started advertising, if you want to see ending A here, you can see ending B here. And so people could go see it a second or third time. I don't want to see everything like that, but I'd like to see more like this if they're done well. So I'm going to have to say Bandersnatch totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's hit the box office really quick. The last weekend of December, Aquaman won the box office with $52 million. Only dropped about 25%, which is really good. Now it's made worldwide more money than Wonder Woman has. It's going to be the highest grossing DC movie ever. Who would have thought that would happen? That Aquaman would beat out Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. Mary Poppins Return came in second, and then Bumblebee came in $20 million. I mean, it's doing okay. I think it's got decent staying power. It only dropped like 3% from first weekend to second weekend. I think that has a lot to do with families going to see it. The big thing we'll have to see this weekend is whether or not Aquaman three-peats or if Escape Room can eke out a win, which is entirely possible if it's popular enough. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I know I've already talked about Netflix titles, which are technically home cinema, but let's hit one that's on DVD and Blu-ray. And that is Night School, new this week. Kevin Hart stars as a man going back to school for his GED as he butts heads with his aggressive and smart-talking teacher, played by Tiffany Haddish.
But I'm here now to get my GED.
You would have to go to night school.
Okay, night school people.
You're the night school teacher? She's not like the teachers that we had back in the day.
This woman is a brick wall. School policy, if you don't pass that test, you're out.
Are you trying to get your GED?
Yes.
The issue is you're clinically dumb.
I knew it.
There's no cure for what you have. Oh my God.
I thought this movie was okay. It wasn't great. Kevin Hart, he's doing what a lot of comedians end up doing. They just do this string of movies, and I don't blame him at all for this. Cash in while you can cash in, man, because this is the only chance you're going to get. You know, you may not in 10 years, you might be a Where Are They Now feature on VH1. But Kevin Hart, he's just doing a lot of these movies. He's got two or three a year coming out, and it's good for him, but it's also sort of diluting his marketplace, and he's not as special as he was, as you know, sort of like the surprise hit. And now he's just got a bunch of kind of routine movies. The big problem I had with this movie in the theater was Kevin Hart has basically the same shtick as Tiffany Haddish does. They both do the same thing, this sort of wise cracking, fast talking, kind of yelling and ramping up approach. And it's sort of like having Lucasello and Lou Costello. You need to have different types of delivery to balance things out. And that's the real downfall of Night School, is Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish are too similar in terms of comedic stylings that they don't have any chemistry. And while they're both funny on their own right, they sort of clash when they get on screen together. And it's more fun to watch the rest of the team, you know, people like, you know, Marilyn Rajkob, who's actually very funny in this movie, doing some funny stuff, or Ron Riggle in this movie. There's some funny stuff with the other characters, and that's actually the best parts of the movie, not the stars that they're anchoring it on. Now, of course, if you've seen the movie in theaters, you get the extended cut, which also has the original theatrical version. There's an alternate opening and a bunch of deleted scenes and then a gag reel. Any good comedy that involves improv at some point has a bunch of alternative takes and alternative content, and that's good if you're a fan of the comedians involved. So at least you get to see some alternate stuff and some new different things in here, and it's not void of special features. But if you're not a fan of Kevin Hart or Tiffany Haddish, it's probably not worth checking out. In the end, I'm going to have to say that Night School still kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray, you have Bad Times at the El Royale, which is totally worth checking out. And that is it for the week. Next week, I'm going to be coming back and I'm going to be talking about A Dog's Way Home and The Upside. Until then, have a fat time at the movies and Happy New Year.